You're listening to Inkstead CITR 101.9 FM. This week my guest will be Jacob Covey, I guess he's the art director for Fantagraphics, and we'll be discussing his new book, Beasts, which is a collection of gorgeous drawings, but a whole thwack of different artists. I think there's like 100 artists or something crazy in there. It's awesome. And the other half of the show will be an interview with Justin B. Williams, who is one of the artists included in the book. He does a character called the Mimic. All the creatures are mythological stuff. It's a great book. Check it out. It should be out, I guess, in the new year. I'll find out during the interview from Jacob when it's coming out. You are listening to Inkstead CITR 101.9 FM. Inkstead CITR 101.9 FM. I am joined by Jacob Covey, you're the art director at Fantagraphics?
Yes, and technically, not that I much care, it's Covey, like a group of quail.
Oh, Covey?
Yeah, Covey.
I am notorious for mispronouncing people's names.
It's not a problem.
I get, when I interviewed Jaime, I think he corrected me about four times, so.
Yeah, his name tricked me for a while.
My excuse is I'm very white.
Well, then that excuse won't work for me, because, you know, I'm quite white, too, and, you know, I think my name reflects that. But
so we're going to talk about the new Beast book that is coming out, I guess, in January?
Yeah, I just received two cartons of advanced copies.
Ooh.
And like 3 hours ago, so it's official, finally, after a year and a half. So, yeah, January. 90 artists. Amazing stuff.
I saw a solicitation for it in the Raincoast catalog, and I was like, oh my god, that looks so good. And then just seeing like little whispers of it on the Fantagraphics, the flog.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us about the Beast book, what it is, and what people can expect from it, and why it is so awesome.
Well, first of all, I guess just to describe it, it's 200 pages. It's full color throughout with gold ink, which is lavish.
Wow, like gold edging?
Well, there's gold ink as a fifth color throughout the book.
Oh, okay.
And there's also gold gilt edges like you'd find on a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Hardcover and cloth spine, and it's extravagant because, well, I'm on staff, so basically I'm not getting paid. And so all that money could go into production. So anyway, it's basically a bestiary. It's like a classical bestiary with 90 beasts, where I did a lot of research on creatures that were genuinely thought to exist in some way throughout history. There's even a guy in here who's an eyewitness to the Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin. He did an illustration of what he claims to have seen, which is basically it's not unlike a werewolf, but it's not a changeling, according to him.
I've got it in front of me. It's like, a human-esque werewolf slash Bigfoot kind of thing. Like, it's a big guy.
Yeah, I guess that would be the way to say it. It's interesting, and he's interesting. And he did these drawings. He's the one unprofessional artist in the book, but more or less, however you want to say that. And then, in addition to that, we've got basically just some of the best artists around. It was like a wish list for me, and amazingly, these people came through. And, people like Tim Biskup, Tony Millionaire, Dave Cooper.
The Dave Cooper piece is just incredible. It's like, I guess, like Eddie Table in a... I don't know how to describe it.
It's nuts. He's incredible. And actually, I made a blog. It's beastsbook.blogspot.com, where I'm posting things that aren't in the book as well as things that are. And it has his pencil sketches and ink. And it's just... Those by themselves are just unbelievable. They're so... To me, it's a final piece in itself, and then that he painted it, it just is over the top.
He's one of those guys where it's like every time I see something by him, I'm just blown away. I had to, when he had those small prints, that little short run, I had to order one of those just out of need.
Oh, yeah. I hope people really think about some of this stuff when they're looking at it, because these artists are basically taking these really... I mean, in a lot of cases, it's pretty esoteric. It's kind of bizarre, like, vegetable lambs, it's like these carnivorous lambs that are tethered to the ground like they're vegetables. It's easy to dismiss them as just these bizarre concepts, but, there's a lot of symbol in that and a lot of cultural stories in it. But, somebody like Dave Cooper, he thinks like that. And he takes these things and really gives them a form, and with some creative thinking on the part of the reader and whatnot, it's really interesting to see how people's mind work and how they translate this thing. And he's a great example of developing an entire world out of this thought. So, his is disturbing.
That's gross. That kind of brings me to another question: what kind of instructions were given to the artist to put together these pieces? Because it is, like you say, it's a wide range, and it's neat that different people take on there's all different styles. I mean, you got Dave Cooper, you've got Stan Sakai, you've got Mark Bell, Martin Cinderetta. There's a whole range of different things. So what kind of things would you go to the person? Would you just kind of give them the description, or?
Well, it was clumsy because, of course, I've never done a book, edited something like this, but I basically went to them and I had read about, 1,000 or better creatures and made brief notes about 200 of them or so. And I emailed that out to the artists and they read through these very brief descriptions. And, I would give them a little more information once they selected something. But, basically they just chose from a list and whatever struck them, they chose that. So then I crossed it off the list for the next artist to choose from.
Do you have people fighting over characters?
There wasn't much. That was another interesting thing about it, is because I did have the list out to, at any given time, maybe 40 different artists, because I was always adding more pages as I proved to the powers that be, the bosses, that this was actually going to work. It was going to be a good book. So it was out to about 40 artists, and they would choose. And it was interesting that there really wasn't much overlap. I think only about three times did somebody have to make a second choice.
It's like a couple of people wanting to do the vampire or something like that. Or...
Yeah, exactly. Like the Cyclops was one of them, which I thought was interesting. I love the Cyclops. So.
Cyclops is a big thing in Vancouver for comics. There's a whole Cyclops art show, and it was all mini comics and stuff.
What do you mean? Like, what is that?
I don't know what the deal was. I think it was Owen Plummer who may have been involved with putting it together, but I may totally be wrong. But they did an art show, and I think it was called Cyclops Dreams.
Okay. Was it actually art of Cyclops, or was this just sort of the idea of the, you know, monovision of something? I can't remember.
I didn't go to the launch. I was a bad comics promoter. But there was, everyone was going around. They took pictures of everyone with these Cyclops, you know, like the Wongly Eye, and people, all these different comic artists with their, with them on their head. I think Colin was very jaded at, no one knew how to put on the Cyclops eye properly. They're putting on the side of their face.
Wow, that's a little hard to picture. But,
it was funny. I've seen some of the photos. Now, this is an odd book for Fantagraphs. Like, there's something I've noticed with Fantagraphs. It's really, like, as far as the output, it's expanding into more art books more recently. And this is, to me, it's totally something different than a normal Fantagraphics book.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's more along the lines of the Blab series that Monty Beauchamp does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of lacking another example, really.
And that's just it. It's kind of like, you know, maybe kind of like the stuff, I guess, Craig Yao does.
Yeah, a little, yeah.
It's different than those because those are all just art books, you know. It's, you know, take it or leave it. It's weird. It's art books. But this is kind of like a concept in its own. And how did you come up with that concept? You're just like, hey, this would be a really neat book. You know, I like monsters. Was it something like you've always had a big thing with mythology?
You know, no. I'm afraid people are just going to think, like, I must be the king of dorks or something. No. It's interesting to me the way it's interesting to anyone, I'm sure. You know, it's like the Yeti is just, you know, it's cool. I mean, it's a great idea. It's like... there's something about it, but I kind of kept, I don't know what made me have the idea, except that, you know, being a graphic designer, because, you know, that's what I am, as a book designer, basically, you know, I've got all this clip art books and all the stuff that, you know, designers masturbate to, so I've got all that stuff, and I just always love looking at the old etchings and all this of these creatures, and I just thought, everyone loves this, so I wonder if I can pull off doing a book. And I think it was, I don't know, it was fortuitous. Gary, the publisher, Gary Groth, and Kim Thompson, the co-publishers, I think they were willing to throw me a bone, basically. I think they were very supportive and willing to take a chance on it, because Gary didn't really see how the idea would work. He didn't believe that, in spite of all of his years of publishing, he didn't think that artists would be willing to do it, considering that the pay was... Well, I don't know if the artists will care if I say it, but, I mean, there was no pay. There's nobody making any money on this except, you know, Fantagraphics, of course, which to me is like giving to a non-profit. So I think that's good. And it's just the sheer generosity of this. Like, I may sound like I'm an optimistic person. I'm not. It's just completely, like, moving to me that these really, really talented people made time to do this. So anyway, I'm not into mythology, you know, too much more than the next person. But it just speaks to people. And, you know, obviously it spoke to 90 artists. So.
Well, one of the things I really love about the book is that it gives all these artists a chance just to interpret something.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got, like, a James Jean's piece is just incredible. I mean, it's just, you look at that and it's like, fuck. Where does this guy come from?
Wait, can I say fuck?
Yeah, it's we're in Canada. Oh, listener discretion be advised. There okay. We go. We have no FCC.
That's fucking off. Jesus, you Canadians are so much better at everything.
We make
most
better,
especially international diplomacy. But you know, that's beside the point.
Yeah, no one listens to us anymore, though. But yeah. Oh, those Canadians are getting all uppity again. But yeah, it's neat. Like James Jean's interpretation, like it's so possessing. You know, the succubus. It's just so. And it's
truly, truly unsettling.
And is that one of the things for you? It's just so neat to be able to see what these people are coming up with as far as concepts.
It was a privilege for me in the sense that no one else is going to experience this book the way I got to, because basically I read about all these things, and so I had like images in my head, you know, just kind of vaguely. So I couldn't see any artwork before I read the descriptions. And, you know, it was just like to see how people made this real, it blew me away. And his, you know, is like that perfect example. Almost everyone, like any artist who's commented on the other art in the book has been like, that James Jean piece is just unbelievable. And it is. It perfectly captures this whole idea of the unknown.
He's so talented, it makes me sick.
Yeah.
He came to town for a small comic convention, and I bought a lot of prints.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. I listened to the interview you did with him, and I remember he actually said something that summarizes, I think, why he was perfect for this. He seems to really put value on the idea of kind of the meaning of the unconscious stuff, which is basically what these creatures are. And I think what he said, talking about his work, was that, you know, some of the effect of, you know, trying not to overthink it, but capturing the right thing just the same. And he said that the conscious mind can really screw things up. And I thought, oh, yeah, that is exactly it, and that's why he's so good at this.
It's interesting with someone like him, because computers are such a big part of his art, too. That he's able to do that. Ah.
You know what? You're right. Yeah, his stuff is so visceral. And I think that's dead in a lot of computer.
And that's one thing that really bugs me about a lot of computer art, is that it is that's like, oh, look, someone can use Photoshop.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could hear that clapping. That was my dead clapping. But let's talk about other artists. James Jean is one of many. We got a couple of Vancouver boys in there, Mark Bell.
Yeah.
Doing, you know, a Mark Bell-esque version of Dare Gollum.
Truly bizarre Gollum, yes. Yeah. I feel like I didn't answer something you asked, but oh well.
It's okay. If it's important, it'll jump back at me.
Yeah, potential.
Was it?
Yeah, Mark Bell and Peter Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
God, who else is up there?
Well, Justin, who's now in Chicago now.
Okay, I didn't know he was from up there. You know what?
He came in. We did the interview in my living room.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. That's so much better. You know, how about we pretend that I'm sitting in your
There we go.
Room? We're roasting wieners in your fireplace.
There we go.
That sounded really suggestive. I apologize for that.
Have you been reading Johnny Ryan comics today?
That's funny, yeah. I did.
Another person who has a fine piece in the... it's actually on the cover of The Stranger, isn't it?
It is on the cover of The Stranger. Do you get that up there?
No, but I saw your post.
Yeah. Yeah, that, again, another really weird piece. But you know what I want to say about Justin Williams, since you're going to be running an interview with him. You know, how old is that kid?
I think he's about 20, 21.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I hate those kids. you know, being the old man that I am, he's not even sure if he likes his piece.
Yeah.
He was really kind of down on it, and he captured something that was so obvious, and yet I don't know. I guess I can't talk about the pieces too much in particular, since the radio doesn't really.
Well, you can get into concept and stuff. It's I don't know. I think it's fine to talk about the piece so people have something to think about when they pick up this awesome book.
Yeah. Well, I think he captured this. He did this creature called the Mimic Dog, and I can't remember where the Mimic Dog comes from, but if I were more adept at speaking and looking at the book, I could tell you, but I'm not. He managed to do this thing with the Mimic Dog where it's this weird creature with it's like a poodle ape. It's like some kind of ape crossed with a poodle. And it's capable of imitating anything. And excuse me. Supposedly he would entertain royal courts back in God knows when. And
days of yore.
Yeah. And they basically kept him as a slave. And that's kind of unusual in this book because it's so very specific, as if they really interacted with this creature a lot. But anyway, so he imitates things and he performs tricks and supposedly can, you know, behave like anything else. So they would keep him basically as a slave. But the way that he interpreted that was to really communicate this, like, conflict that this poodle ape has about its own personality. So it, like, really has this cool feel where, you know, Justin has this really simple style.
Yeah, he starts out with just a pencil and pen.
Oh, really? So, I mean, and then he just...
Well, he did a little thing in my sketchbook for me. And,
nice.
Yeah, and it's just, he just very simple, just really tight lines. Like, there's some similarities to that whole Mark Bell school, but he's got his own thing, and I'm happy he kind of, I could see him kind of going there, but he stayed out of it. And it's just this neat, I don't know, the thing about the Mimic is just so complex.
Yeah.
And so I can't wait to see it. Like, I have a digital version I want to see, like, you know, so I can look up close, because there's just so much in there.
Yeah, I know, it's so complex, and it's funny because he's one of those people that I think it's easy to look at his work and you know, I don't want that to sound, that I'm on the cusp of sounding insulting or something, but I think the population at large can look at stuff like that and not be savvy to what he's accomplishing with,
mm-hmm.
where it looks really kind of doodly and too simplified or something, you know, I don't know how to say it, but in fact, it's just so layered.
That's exactly what it is to me. It's just that there's so much to it. It's rendered in its own unique kind of thing, and it's one thing that strikes me with a lot of his work is it's very complex. It's I don't want to say messy, but it is messy. It's like mentally messy.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot going on.
Well, yeah, and you know, now that I think about it, it's all the Canadians you mentioned. So. The Canadians have a lot going on in their heads. But yeah, Mark Bell, Peter Thompson, and Justin all kind of have this doodle quality that's definitely... Well, Mark Bell, only at times, of course, like with his Gollum, his piece in the book, and Peter's, they're all have a sort of doodle quality, but it's I don't even know. I'm not very good at speaking on that, but... I would call it a doodle quality, but just so tight and
perfected.
Well,
you've seen the Naga Dodd book, I presume.
You know what? I'm embarrassed to say I haven't. I've been wanting to order it, but I work at Fantagraphics, so I don't have any money.
It's more of that charity thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's a neat part in it, and they're totally like getting way off topic, but there's a neat part in there where they go through the process of how they put together one of those pieces, their jam pieces.
Hmm.
So that's really neat to me, like, to see how they put it together. So, like, one person does this layer, another person does another layer. And so it's, like, people like those, Peter Thompson, Mark Bell, Jason McLean, Owen Plummer, all sorts of Vancouverite goodness. One piece that stuck out to me, The Pegasus by Jesse Reno.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where did he come from? And where can we see more?
He is absolutely in that camp of... oh my god, I don't like to get too intellectual about genres or something.
Yeah,
I'm drawing a blank, but it's more than that, you know.
I can see like a bit of Baron Story influence with color in some of it.
Yeah,
it's
got
like that really like dark,
crunchy,
just mess to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, it's like the Art Brut style, or, you know, just, he's prolific, basically. He's done about, if I'm not mistaken, I think he says that he's done about 900 paintings.
Wow.
And he's like, you know, 30 or something. He's just somebody that it's clearly it's a cathartic act. Something he just
does it.
Compelled to do. I admire that a lot. But yeah, his is definitely a standout. Well, you know, hell, they're all standouts.
It is.
That sounds like I'm kind of bullshitting you on that, but I think you've... Have you seen the PDF of the book?
That's what I'm looking at right now. It's got it on my laptop, and I'm just going through it. And that's the thing I love about it, is that it is so varied, and like, we have people like we're talking about, like the Mark Bells and the Peter Thompsons, but then we've got like some of comics greats like Sammy Harkham, Anders Nilsson, both guys I'm huge fans of, and then, like, you know, good old Johnny Ryan doing something that's Johnny Ryan.
Well, and you have people from... Basically, I tried to reach into all the areas where I've kind of... You know, I'm not an expert on all of it. I just find people that are kind of in a certain genre, and people tend to get locked into a genre because people just associate them with that, so that's the only place they get work or get gallery shows or sales or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it is. It's people from comics, skate, rock posters, you know, like, I guess I could name people, for example, like skate, you know, epitomized by...
a certain style.
What's that?
A certain style or genre, and kind of locked into that?
Yeah, like, you know, skate deck artists and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's really epitomized by Jeremy Fish in the book, who had a monograph, basically, of his work put out a year ago or better. And then, you know, like rock posters, people like Little Friends of Printmaking, who are nuts. And children's book people like S. Britt, who is just awesome.
You have Ink Stud's friend, Renee French, who is always excellent.
Yeah.
Do you know she does her art at real size?
Excuse me? No, I don't. I'd be curious.
That
Bigfoot piece is just a complete... She did the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And apparently the Bigfoot meant a lot to her as a kid growing up in Australia. I'm not totally clear on that, but I guess there's a Bigfoot there that's just a very common... Like, the Northwest has Bigfoot. But yeah, she had a weird take on it. I mean, a really...
it's sad.
Human. Yeah, it's sentimental in its way. It's interesting. It's cool. I like it.
It's some great eyes in it.
Yeah.
Can't
Now, you also have an art show that is coinciding with the opening of the official opening of the Fantagraphic store.
Yeah.
On Saturday and stuff. Well, actually, this will be the past Saturday, because this is airing on the 7th. Sorry, people. I've got my wisdom teeth being pulled. I won't be alive. How much stuff will be at the art show? And how long will that be on for?
Well, I was going to say, first of all, that, you know, it opens this Saturday, but the Fantagraphic store is going to be open forever, more or less. And it will always have a rotating gallery of original comic art in it, starting off with, I won't even bother to list the names.
It's basically the Fantagraphic staples.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chris Ware and all.
Yeah.
You know.
I managed to go to the show in New York, and that was awesome.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah, I was in New York for like 3 days, and it was luckily right next to a subway station.
That was the Society of Illustrators.
Yeah, gorgeous building. And I went downstairs, and there's a Jack Davis original downstairs.
Oh, man. You know, I wanted him for the book so bad, because he's, you know...
Jack Davis?
Yeah, Jack Davis. I tried to get Gary to ask him. I think Gary did ask him for me. But, you know, he's not into doing that anymore.
No.
That would have been great.
Now, the art show, but that's... The actual Beast art show isn't happening at the Fantagraphic store.
No, thank you for getting me on topic. excuse me. I have organized that with a brand new gallery opening up that's part of Born Magazine, which is an online artist collaboration site. So bornmagazine.org, I think. Anyway, so they're opening up a gallery that just happens to be on the same block as the Fantagraphic store. Which is funny, because there's nothing out there, unfortunately, in Georgetown. But, you know, there's a bar.
As long as it's not as... I went to the Fantagraphic warehouse once, and that was a desolate area.
Yeah, yeah. It's even further out than that.
Really?
Yeah, which is good and bad. It's supposed to be a growing area, but, you know, in the meantime, there's a couple cool galleries to make the trek out for.
Now, are you going to try and expand the gallery show beyond... Seattle, like maybe do something in LA at the, like, I don't know, is it called the Secret Headquarters? I can't remember.
Yeah, Secret Headquarters. I don't want to. I mean, I do. I'd love for the publicity for the artists. I'd love for it to be an entity outside of, you know, here. But it is so much work that I just don't know if I can handle it. And I've been working on this book for over a year and a half. And, you know, in that time, basically started dating my wife the week that I got the book approved, and we got married, you know, and bought a house within the time that this book is finally coming out.
It's an important book for yourself.
Yeah, it's like been a baby, and which is ridiculous. Yeah, so just to finish that, the Bell and Whistle Gallery is where it's going to be, and their regular hours for the show, they're not the greatest hours, but Friday and Saturday, 4 to 8 p.m., and it's insane, actually. Jacob McMurray and Gabe Keane volunteered to put on the show, and they're amazing. I co-curated the Art of Modern Rock exhibit with them. That's, I don't know if you're familiar, but there's a rock poster book that's kind of the Bible of rock posters, and put out by Chronicle Books. And Jacob is the curator at the Experience Music Project.
Okay.
Not to mention the Sci-Fi Museum. And we all curated this thing together before, and I know how much work it is now, and I can't. It's crazy to me that people run galleries. They're doing this multimedia thing. So there's going to be about 20 original pieces in this little gallery, and then Gabe is a wizard with multimedia. So I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it because I haven't seen it, but... Basically, there's going to be two projectors projecting original art, I mean, projecting art from the book amongst all the original art, but it's going to project it right into the frame of something.
Oh, weird.
And then there's also going to be a text block that comes up, and I don't know. It's something I don't quite grasp. It's going to be impressive, though. And it kind of sounds like basically like two 10-year-olds sat around saying, oh, and then it'll be like lasers will shoot out. And, you know, and stuff like that.
But it'll work.
Yeah. I'm impressed. And then Jacob did this weird, yeah, and by the way, it's two Jacobs. He did this crazy, map of the world that he's painting on the wall, and then he's made up a key for where all these different creatures are reported to have been seen.
Wow.
It's going to be great.
Crazy. Well, I look forward to checking out. I'm hoping I might try and swing down. I mean, I keep forgetting that Seattle is, like, maybe 3 hours drive from Vancouver.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping I'll try and make it down for the Ellen Forney Pete Bag signing.
Yeah.
Hopefully. We'll see
that'd
if I'm
cool
conscious, but I'm hoping so. Thank you so much for sticking at work late today to yak about the Beast book.
Oh, of course. Thanks so much for caring. I'm glad the artists have people paying attention to them.
Oh, and you know what? I think once it comes out, there's going to be a lot of people flocking towards it. I showed a copy of it to one of my friends, and he was just blown away.
Good.
So.
Good. I hope so. Good. And, if anybody wants to, you know, buy stuff from Fantagraphics, please do. They need it.
Oh, it's a Christmas sale right now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, there is.
So, there we go.
Commercial radio all of a sudden.
Well, I'll be doing, doing a Beto Hernandez on the 14th, and after that, or Beto, I should pronounce it properly, and then my 2 weeks after that will be my best comic of the year, so I'm sure there'll be a couple of things by Fantagraphics that I liked. Lord knows I spent enough at the SPX. Thank you so much for joining us, Jacob.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And I hope you have a good evening.
You take care and carry that ink dust torch.
It will be shining. That was Jacob Covey, awesome, talented guy from Fantagraphics. And check out the Beast book. I'll play a song now, and then we shall have Justin B. Williams. Rock and roll makes sense. CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you.
I'm speaking with Justin Williams, local painter, artist, currently about to relocate to Chicago. Now, you have a piece in the upcoming Fantagraphics book, Beasts, and so maybe tell us a bit about how you got involved with that book, and then a bit about the piece within it, because I got a chance to look at it earlier today.
Oh, all right. Well, the book is put out by Jacob Covey, an editor, young editor man, who joined the Fantagraphics team, I think, like a couple years ago, and I think he's done a couple books before, but this one's like his first like solo deal. And basically, Beasts is a like a modern bestiary book, like an anthology of different mythological creatures done by like a lot of like drawers and painters. Like today, I think there's like over like around 200 different artists. I think, or 100, 200, it's a pretty big book, and basically, there was like a big list of different mythological creatures, their country of origin, and, you know, like a synopsis on what they did, like in their role, like as a creature, and then like you could pick what, creature you wanted to do, and then you drew it, and then it got in the book. So it's pretty fun and interesting. I think it would be like something I'd really enjoy. Like when I was younger, I'd probably be really, really, really excited about seeing this book come out. So I was happy to like be a part of it.
Well, I looked at your piece. It was The Mimic.
Oh, yeah. I forget what country it's from. I think it might be the Philippines or some Southeast Asian country. I was attracted to it because it was a little bit different from the rest of the creatures. It was like, it took the form of like a monkey, and it had like a raccoon face or something like that. But the interesting part was that it could morph into like any shape or object. Historically or mythologically, it was considered to be used as slaves for humans. So what interested me artistically was that it was a very, like, talented kind. It had really cool powers, but it was reduced to being used as a human slave, which I thought was kind of sad. And so, like, the drawing I did kind of, like, reflected that. Well, I tried to, at least. I don't know if I was successful or not.
Well, one thing that struck me about the drawing is it's, and it's something I noticed as maybe a theme in your work, is a certain amount of, like, claustrophobia in there. There's a lot of people within that, in the fetal position.
Oh, yeah. Well, basically the drawing is the creature, the mimic thing, and then, emerging from its head is, different creatures and shapes and like forms, and they're all kind of exploding and creating like a head, like, and it's kind of like a reflection of the creature's inner life, like
just like kind of going into it a little bit that it's gone through.
Yeah, it's going in a little bit too deep, but I wanted to like, I don't know, I don't really draw, like, creatures very often. Well, I do, but they always kind of have, like, a purpose in my work, and so I wanted to have, like, it's a very literal undertaking. Like, you have, like, the creature and the story, and then you, like, illustrate it. It's like an illustration job, almost, but, so I wanted to, like, have a very, personal interpretation of that. And I guess the claustrophobia part of it would be somehow related to the fact that it could, it had the freedom of choosing to be whatever it could be, but it was still used as a slave. So it kind of has that conflict there, which I try to, like, portray in the drawing.
So it's always kind of held back.
Yeah. And I think, like, maybe, like, a lot of people can, like, relate to that feeling, maybe, or not. I don't know.
What kind of medium do you use when doing your work?
Mostly gouache paint, which is, it's not a very popular, well, I guess it's popular among, like, artists, but not a lot of people know what it is. It's, like, just, like, a halfway between acrylic and oils, kind of, and watercolors. It's, like, a mix of everything. You can use it dry and, like, just chunk it on, like, oils, or you can add a little bit of water and have it flat, like, acrylics, or you can use a lot of water and, like, wash it out, like, with watercolors. So it's a really finicky, like, medium because, like, it dries, but if you add water to the painting or the canvas, like, it'll start running again. So it's a finicky medium, but the colors are, like, really intense, and it's really versatile, so I really enjoy it. So I mainly use gouache, and then I use pencil. I draw a lot. I used to do a lot of, like, pen drawings, but mostly been just focusing on, like, paint and pencil.
What kind of size is the originals? Do you do a standard size, or is it just each piece has its own unique context?
A lot of it's standard. It's just, like, either letter-sized paper or, like, 11 by 14 inches, a bit bigger. A lot of the work I do tends to be smaller because I travel a lot, and so I'm always, like, bringing my stuff with me. So they're mostly pretty small. I mainly work on paper, and, like, it's kind of a hassle to lug around, like, huge pieces of paper. And so I tend to work, like, smaller. But then, like, when I do exhibitions and stuff, I like to, when I get the chance, paint, like, wall paintings, like, I guess you'd call them, I guess they're kind of, like, temporary murals inside the gallery, and those are, like, those can get pretty big, and I use house paint for those.
I saw the one on the website for, is it Drama?
Drama, yeah.
I guess it's kind of like a mountain.
Oh yeah, that was here in Vancouver. It was at this place, this store boutique / gallery called Goonpack. It's on East Cordova, or West Cordova, right before it becomes East Cordova.
Okay.
It's in Gastown.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore. It was up for like 2 months, but it was very big. I think it was maybe, I'd say 20 feet tall and like maybe,
wow,
30 feet wide. That was only part of it, the photo you saw. It was actually really, really large.
How long did that take you to do that piece?
I worked on it for 2 weeks. Like, it was weird because they wouldn't let me in after hours. They'd only let me in when the store was open, and that was, like, 1 p.m. to, like, 6 p.m. or 5 p.m. They had really, like, stupid hours.
Artist residence, almost? Or artist in residence is what they're trying to go for?
Well, not really. Like, I don't know what they were going for. It was weird. But they only let me in, like, 5 or 6 hours a day, so I was pretty much doing that for, like, 2 weeks. Mostly when you're doing, like, a wall painting, at least what I like to do is just like go at it like a couple days in a row, like just like 10-15 hour days, and you just like get it over with and just like put everything into it, and then yeah,
just let it
instead
out
of like a prolonged, like,
do you feel that like hampers the art, having to stretch it out and not being able to just go and give it its own?
Well, yeah, because, like, painting a wall is kind of weird because it takes you a while to get into it because it's like really big and it's like in your face and you have to be like on a ladder so you're like up close. You have to come down the ladder and then look at it from far away and then go up close again. And so like it's a really tedious thing. And so like if you are allowed to like work on it at a long for longer periods at a time, it definitely helps. Doing a little bit at a time, like a couple hours every day, is just...
Does it kind of like lose focus on like maybe you had some intentions and then that kind of falls to the wayside?
Yeah, you kind of have to keep like a notebook on you or something and write little notes to yourself, otherwise you'll forget.
Do you like thumbnail it?
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't. I would just... Well, that one I went into with a little bit of a sketch, so I guess, yeah, I thumbnailed it a little bit. Before I had just worked like off the top of my head, and that works too, but that's better when you kind of have your own hours and you're allowed to go in the gallery whenever you want.
So what kind of influences do you draw from in your work? Like I see maybe it's like some Basquiat.
A little. I have a lot of influences because I'm like a big fan of like so much stuff. I grew up in Japan, and I grew up in Tokyo for many years, and they have a really saturated culture, like obviously, but it's very saturated with a sense of character, like character, not a sense of character, but character is like little creatures and faces, and it's in their product design, in their advertisements, on their clothes. They're obviously obsessed with toys and anime and like manga, and like it's like everywhere you'll see, they like kind of
faces and everything.
Yeah, they express their feelings through like faces and like kind of these cartoony like entities, and that and it appeals to children, like because you know, like it's very direct. Like if you see a can of orange juice with a cute little happy character on it, like a little kid's gonna want to drink that orange juice because, you know, and it's a cool visual language, and it's very direct, and it's very, like, explicit, like, and so that was a big influence growing up, seeing, like, all of that, and, like, being surrounded by, like, a huge saturation of, characters, and like watching a lot of, I grew up, I loved cartoons, and like I like comics, and so my like initial language for drawing and like making like art or whatever was like cartoons and like a cartoon related like visual language. And what's cool nowadays is that visual language is becoming a more accepted form of fine art. Like a lot of like people who are showing in museums and like big galleries nowadays and are gaining international like renown are people who communicate in that language, which is really cool because like people like Barry McGee or like Chris Johansson or like someone like Jason McLean, who's like very popular in
former Vancouver,
Vancouver, and like Mark Bell is very respected, like you know, in America at least. And they're all like really talented people, and they're all communicating with this cartoony like kind of language, and that's really cool because I think it's like a mark of this generation. Like the value of being able to draw realistically and you know be photorealistic isn't as important nowadays as it is to be able to like communicate like maybe interesting ideas or themes or whatever. And I guess a lot of popular art now is like all conceptual, but I don't really understand it. So, but coming from my viewpoint, I grew up really being enthralled and involved with cartoons and comics and like that kind of visual language. And then when I was younger, in my early teens, starting to like look at art, obviously those artists who were like communicating in that language, like a lot of the people from like the Beautiful Losers exhibition that's going on right now, which is like a lot of post-punk skate culture, post-graffiti, like post-comic book type guy, like artists who are now like all pretty famous now, all kind of, a lot of them came from that like kind of field too, and they kind of set the bar. And then
would you say like Dave Cooper would be someone that fits that?
Yeah, Dave Cooper, who does a lot of fine art now, I guess. I don't even think he's doing too many comics anymore.
No, he's done with comics.
Yeah, he obviously came up doing comics, and now he's doing fine art, and I think a lot of other comic guys are doing that. Like, Chris Ware just had, like, some, you know, big exhibition at the Chicago Museum.
And then, Jim Woodring's given up on comics, too, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jim Woodring, like, is an example of someone who's, like, just comics, but he kind of does it in a weird, like, painterly style. And he'd, like, be perfect for, you know... Well, I mean, he's already really well-known, but... Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Is that something you want to do with your art? Like, is there, like, a storytelling aspect... it, or do you feel like within itself there's already a story?
I think a lot of the pieces, like, I like to leave, like, they're all about something. Sometimes they're really vague, like, even to me, because I kind of work in a kind of, like, a loose fashion. I don't really plan out most of what I do, but I'm actually focusing more on I'm focusing my work more, I'm constraining myself a little bit and also expanding a lot and going in a different direction with my work, and I'm going to be creating I'm going to be focusing on a body of work that I want to be working on for the next few years that kind of revolves around, an ongoing narrative. It's not like a literal narrative. That's the people aren't going to really have like speech bubbles, or there's not going to be he walked down the corridor and saw like his friend type of thing. It's more
conceptual.
A little bit. It's more subconscious. I guess when the body of work is put together for exhibitions or as a whole and people go there, they...
It's going to be like a central theme.
Yeah, but I'm really planning on it, and I'm doing like a lot of research. I started from a lot of different sources, like a lot of sources from real life and a lot of sources from my own life, and I'm putting them all into this story. I don't want to talk about the story, though, because I don't want to jinx it. But.
Yeah, that sounds interesting, and I think I look forward to seeing more work. Will you have plan to have some kind of website reference? Because right now you have stuff on certain websites, but...
Oh, yeah.
Possibly organizing
I'm on world. A few, like, gallery websites, but right now I don't know how to do a website.
Do I have someone doing mine for me?
But I'm going to art school. That's why I'm going to Chicago. I got a scholarship to go to the Art Institute of Chicago.
Wow.
And I think they're going to teach me how to make a website. So, like, maybe in a couple of years I'll have a website.
Do you have any prior training artistically?
No.
It's all self-taught?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But,
So art really speaks true for you as, like, a medium, just like your art. There's not a lot of like, I'm not trying to like contextualize this. It just seems very honest.
Well, I try to be. There's you can make art that's purely aesthetic and enjoyable to see, and I like make art with a very specific aesthetic language, like that we were talking about earlier, the cartoony language, but I express like everything I can with that language, because it's like what I do. I just don't really do anything much else except, like, I guess traveling around and stuff, but I try to be as honest and genuine as possible, and yeah, hopefully almost, that comes out.
There's more. Almost like a primalness to some of your work.
Just
as part of that honesty, it just seems like it just oozes out.
Yeah, maybe. Never really thought about that. Primalness, I guess some of my work has, like, when I'm talking about honest and expressing a lot of things, like, some of my work has to do with, like, sex, and maybe there's a lot of, like, weird sex stuff, and that's pretty primal, I guess. Like, sex is pretty weird, and I like to draw about it sometimes because it's ever-present in our lives with, like, everything, and so I think it's important to, like, draw or paint about sex, and I guess, you know, within a certain context, it can make your work look pretty raw. But in terms of primalness, I don't know what you mean.
Maybe it's just me.
Thanks for listening to Inkstead, CITR 101.9 FM. Join us next week when our guest will be Gilbert Hernandez, creator of the Palomar storyline from Love and Rockets, one of the Hernandez brothers responsible for Love and Rockets, and he also has Sloth coming out from Vertigo, or that is out from Vertigo, awesome book, weird, more magic surrealism from this sequential master. Thanks to my guests, Jacob Covey and Justin B. Williams. I love the book, and I think you will too when it comes out. Beast from Fantagraphics. CITR 101.9 FM, Inkstuds.
The beast in me is caged by frail and fragile bars. Restless by day and by night, rants and rages at the stars. God help the beast in me. The beast in me has had to learn to live with pain and how to shelter from the rain. And in the twinkling of an eye, might have to be restrained. God help the beast in me. Sometimes it tries to kid me that it's just a teddy bear, and even somehow manage to vanish in the air, and that is when I must beware of the beast in me. That everybody knows, they've seen him out dressed in my clothes, patently unclear if it's New York or New Year. God help the beast in me.